Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, happy 4th of July, everybody, and happy Canada Day, 3 days late, to our Canadian... Do we have Canadian friends? We have Canadian interests. Isn't that what Churchill said? Nations don't have friends. They have interests. I'm like a nation. Ladies and gentlemen, the Sunday Yak shows on the 4th of July. How are you going to book important guests on the morning of the 4th of July to come on and just spew some usual Washington stuff? Well, this is where, you know, dedication to your job comes in. Because who are the three most familiar, most booked guests on the Washington Yak Show circuit? I'm going to bet they would be in this order: John McCain, Joe Lieberman, and Lindsey Graham. Two Republicans and a... what do you know? They all show up in Kabul today and therefore are the exclusive guests of each of the Sunday Yak shows that's around, because Meet the Press took off for Wimbledon. So they all got on TV today, and the bookers all got an, quote, an important guest, unquote, on the 4th of July. So it's win-win, don't you see? And, of course, they're all saying exactly the same thing. This is our last best chance. We got to do this. But what they don't say is current Pentagon budget for the Afghanistan war, I think just for the remainder of this year, or for this next fiscal year, is $33 billion. That's I got that on me. Simultaneously, or almost simultaneously, General Petraeus last week said the number of al-Qaeda members currently in Afghanistan is in the, quote, double digits, unquote. You could, let's put it at the top of that range. There's 100 of them. $33 billion. You could give each guy $300,000 to go away. Try it. What do you got? It's lose-lose, because then Graham, McCain, and Lieberman don't get on TV. And speaking of which, here's a guy we haven't heard from lately, weighing in with his wisdom. Henry Kissinger, former U.S. Secretary of State, among other things, and Nobel Peace Prize winner, has warned that Washington's plan to begin handing over responsibility to national forces in Afghanistan in July, a year from now, provides a mechanism for failure. And, ladies and gentlemen, if you're asking for expertise on that subject, there's the guy. In an interview with the Financial Times of London, Kissinger said the public must be prepared for a long struggle. Okay, must be. Guess what? He says Obama needs to rethink the deadline and the way the Afghan strategy has been designed. Well, it's been designed like the Vietnam's. Oh. In his view, the goals were too ambitious and too focused on a Kabul government with limited influence in the rest of the country. That's never happened before either. The strategy needs adaptation to realities, he said. This just in from Kissinger. Adapt to reality. Here's one. Top officials in President Karzai's government have repeatedly derailed corruption investigations of politically connected Afghans, according to U.S. officials who provided the authorities with wiretapping technology and other assistance to help crack down on endemic graft. This is according to the Washington Post. In recent months, U.S. officials said Afghan prosecutors and investigators have been ordered to cross names off case files, prevent senior officials from being placed under arrest, and disregard evidence against executives of a major financial firm suspected of helping the nation's elite move millions of dollars overseas. Is that enough reality for you, Secretary Kissinger? As a result, U.S. advisors sent to Kabul by the Justice Department, the FBI, and the DEA have come to see Afghanistan's corruption problems in increasingly stark terms. Above a certain level, people are being very well protected, says a senior U.S. official involved in the investigation. More about that later in this broadcast. Oh, wow, a tease. A tease on the 4th of July. I should be ashamed of myself. Ladies and gentlemen, this is New Orleans, Louisiana. The oil continues. And people have been emailing me and asking me or suggesting to me that somehow it's misguided to focus too much obloquy, thank you, on BP. They're all the same, says a couple of email correspondents. Attention, you guys. BP faces fresh criticism over its approach to safety after critics said it did not use a standard industry process to assess risk ahead of the Deepwater Horizon thing. The procedure known as a safety case was developed in Britain after a catastrophic oil rig explosion in 1988. Royal Dutch Shell confirms it has always developed safety cases, a lengthy written document on each of its thousands of wells, even though it's only mandatory in some countries, not the good old US of A. BP admitted to the Sunday Telegraph that it did not use safety cases on any of its U.S. wells, including the high-pressure, deep-water Macondo well that is currently going. And the director of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration says his agency was working with BP to approve safety training for offshore cleanup workers. He said this on June 18th, 2 weeks after the interview with ProPublica, in which the OSHA guy said he expected a new training course to begin within days. The course has not started. OSHA is reviewing the curriculum. There'll be more, another tease, and more about BP later in this broadcast. So you might as well stick around because all the good stuff is coming later in this broadcast. Hello, welcome to the show.
Sailed the moon, one of the ages most uncertain. certain hour. Tried to sing an American tune. Hey, but it's all right. I have to be all right. You can't be forever blessed. Still, tomorrow is another working day, and I'm trying to get some rest. So I'm trying to get some rest.
From the shores of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, spitting distance from the London Avenue Canal. Do they have a New Orleans Avenue Canal in London? No, I don't think so. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming to this edition of Le Show. Happy 4th of July, everybody. And now, news from outside the bubble. Apropos what we were just talking about, yes, I do have a frog in my pocket. From the Telegraph in London, this is how the Afghan government deals with corruption allegations. A former British Army officer was serving 2 years in an Afghan jail, kept in solitary confinement, after learning that a $10,000 bounty was put on his head. Bill Shaw told the Telegraph he took the threat seriously. Inmates had also made throat-cutting gestures as he exercised in the prison yard. Some prisoners had advised him to convert to Islam for his own safety. He spent 5 weeks in the maximum security wing of the prison, after being convicted in March of corruption. He maintained he was not paying a bribe. He was convicted of bribing two Afghan intelligence officers to secure the release of two impounded armored cars. He said he thought he was paying a legitimate release fee to a person who turned out to be a con man who then ran off with the money. The Afghan court convicted him anyway. This week, an appeals court threw out the case on grounds of lack of evidence. Message delivered. According to the London Observer, a new study has come up with a suggestion that the breakup of relationships within groups of friends is contagious. One couple within a social group divorces and their friends' relationships collapse around them like, and here's how you know it's from Britain, ninepins. The researchers have called it divorce clustering. So I don't move into Larry King's nip. No, come on now. And say that a split up among immediate friends increases your own chances of getting divorced by 75%. The effect drops to 33% if the divorce is between friends of a friend, what the researchers call 2 degrees of separation, then disappears almost entirely at 3 degrees. The more divorcees you know, the higher your own chances of becoming one. From Agence France-Presse, the Lockerbie bomber, who was supposed to live only 3 months, remember? You remember. Could live for 10 years or longer, according to the cancer specialist who gave him the dead within 3 months prognosis last year. Professor Carol Sikora, who assessed Abdelbaset al-Megrahi for the Libyan authorities about a year ago, told the Sunday Times it's embarrassing that Megrahi had outlived his three-month prognosis. The Scottish government, as you know, released Megrahi in August last year on compassionate grounds because he has terminal cancer. Grimes, the only person convicted of the 1988 Lockerbie bombing. Professor Sikora, Dean of Medicine at Buckingham University, they got a university in Buckingham, was the only expert the Libyan authorities could find who would agree to put the three-month estimate on Megrahi's life. The paper reported the advice of two other experts was ignored after they said Megrahi could live for 19 months. Professor Sikora said there was always a chance he could live for 10 years or 20 years, but it's very unusual. He said the Libyan authorities had made it clear to him that if he found Megrahi would die in a matter of months, it would greatly improve his chances of being released from jail. It was clear that 3 months was what they were aiming for. On the balance of probabilities, I felt I could sort of justify that, he said. He denied he'd come under any pressure. But his fingernails are growing back. And from the Telegraph in London, the Tasmanian Devil is being rebranded in an attempt to restore its reputation, which conservationists say has been damaged by Warner Brothers cartoons. They believe the animal has been depicted as ferocious, aggressive, and bloodthirsty, and are now trying to give the devil an image overhaul and portray them as shy and retiring, just like me, in an attempt to convince the Australian public that they're worth saving. Wild populations of Tasmania devils are under grave threat from devil facial tumor disease, a type of contagious cancer that has decimated their numbers by 60% in the last decade. Wildlife experts now fear the devils, which are the world's largest surviving carnivorous marsupial, look it up, could follow the Tasmanian tiger into extinction within 20 years. The animals were named by British settlers for their ear-splitting screams and strong jaws. They were immortalized by the cartoon character Taz as slavering, demented, and ravenous. You won't see the words slavering and ravenous in an American newspaper now, will you? Said Nick DeVos, unit supervisor of Australian animals at Taronga Zoo. You can't get Taronga than that. They're not a screaming, spinning, blubbering Taz, but an animal that does have individual behavior and traits that aren't always aggressive. They do have two sides. You know, they're like Murdoch. What? Who said that? Ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, and it's clean, it's safe, it's cheap. It is, of course, our friend, the old splittable atom. And there is news of nuclear power this week. A radioactive form of hydrogen called tritium, you've heard of it on this broadcast, found leaking out of a storage tank at the Exelon nuclear generating station near Marseille, Illinois. I'm sure it's not pronounced Marseille. Is it pronounced Marseille? Marseilles, of course. Bob Dunn, ladies and gentlemen, with pronunciation guidance for your host. Tritium leaks. It's happening. And nearly a quarter of a century after the nuclear reactor at Chernobyl exploded and spewed radioactivity across the world, it has finally stopped making Scottish sheep too hot to eat. Levels of radioactive contamination in sheep on Scottish farms dropped below safety limits for the first time last month. Controls on the movement and sale of sheep have been enforced in Scotland since the explosion in 1986. It was the world's worst nuclear accident. It has been blamed for causing tens of thousands of deaths from cancers. The grass that was polluted was eaten by the sheep and has persisted in the environment far longer than originally anticipated. That never happens. We usually get these things so right. Speaking of which, ladies and gentlemen, even horn players have to inhale. News of the Olympic movement and radioactivity combined for your listening pleasure. The development of the Olympic site in East London after the Games could be in jeopardy because of radioactive waste buried beneath the Olympic site, according to experts. According to an investigation by the British newspaper The Guardian, Any development of the site risks unearthing 100 tons of radioactive waste dumped at the former landfill site decades ago. That's where I'd build my Olympic Games site, on a radioactive dump. Documents obtained under the Freedom of Information Act rules revealed that, contrary to government guidelines, waste from thorium and radium has been mixed with very low-level waste and buried in a so-called disposal cell close to the Olympic Stadium. You know, right about where Dick Ebersol will be sitting when it... After the Games, the demolition of the Olympic Stadium to make way for housing is a possibility because government and sporting authorities so far have been unable to agree on any future use for the White for the stadium. A British bookie has made demolition of the stadium 5-1 favorite behind its continued use for athletics or conversion into a home ground for a soccer team. But officials insist there's no risk from the waste to athletes or spectators during the event. Yet further development of the site could expose the waste, which some experts claim should have been moved to a safe site. Damn those experts. An independent nuclear analyst says the Olympic site's hurried and unplanned development may have resulted in a great deal of public harm to the local communities remaining around the site. Overall, there is some doubt about the applicability and validity of the radiological risk analysis undertaken for future uses. Just strap Geiger counters on the runners. And the U.S. Olympic Committee says it intends to maintain its partnership with BP, providing it can find as quick a solution as possible to the crisis in the Gulf. The USOC board discussed its sponsorship with the oil company. The board is monitoring the situation very carefully, says USOC Chairman Larry Probst. BP signed the sponsorship deal in February, saying the Olympics were a great opportunity to show its dedication to environmentally sustainable energy production. And of course, in addition to sponsoring the USOC, the oil company also sponsors the London Organizing Committee of the Games. Hope you kids are training hard. BP needs you. The Olympics, ladies and gentlemen, it's a movement, and everybody needs one. Every day.
Band of jerks are light. the flag and lower the taxes. Man the bomb and bury the hatchet. Chiefs of staff, call the session. Call for an end to armed aggression. They're easing up on covert action. All opposing factions. They communicated with the communists. Pacified the pacifists. Stopped all pain, stopped all sorrow. Real life shall resume tomorrow.
We thank Frank Sinatra Jr. for calling in last segment with his good wishes. We didn't have time to take Mickey Rooney Jr.'s call on the air, but we're going to play back on the weekend show this Saturday night on CNN. With us now in our Los Angeles studio is an old friend of this show. He's the former lead singer of the great boy band of the 90s, Boys R Us, Dewey Gordon. Dewey, welcome back to what may be your last visit to Larry King Live.
Oh, bite your tongue, Mr. King, and of course I don't mean that.
No, it sounded like I'd had a stroke or something. Now, last time you were on the show, your group was reuniting.
That's right. I'd shaved my head to get back into the Boys R Us spirit,
yeah.
Although none of the other guys did, which was a surprise to me.
Was that a stunt they were playing on you?
No, I think my outgoing message was just stuck in their spam filters.
So as everybody can see, you're growing your hair back.
Yes, sir.
Which is something I wish I could do.
Yes, sir. The reunion thing was a great idea. Yeah. The feeling in that studio for those 75 minutes was real, real special. But, you know, the great Mr. Nate Pendleman.
He's your longtime handler.
Oh, he only did that a couple. He's our longtime manager, yes, sir. Mm-hmm. And he looked over the touring concert scene this summer.
And it's been rough out there here. The great John Tesh, he always plays Red Rocks. He told me they downsized the venue for his show. He only played the Three Rocks.
Yes, sir. So anyway,
hey, after September, only person could do that material for is my wife.
Oh, please give her my love.
You can do it yourself if you...
Anyway, Mr. Pendleman said he thought this wasn't the primo year for the reunion. And Chuchi had gotten his cab driving slot back anyway, so we'll see what happens. But I didn't want to come on your show tonight to talk about me, Mr. King.
Now that's a switch.
Sure, and it's over too. I wanted to talk about you.
Hey, I got a lot of life in me yet. Got a lot of soccer games go to, just to make sure.
That he kicks the ball, gotcha. But you've been so special to me, always, you know, helping out when I had a record to promote.
And Nate Pendleman and I go way back. The old Brooklyn days. He used to fence stolen hubcaps.
You know, he's told us some of those stories.
Every word is true. I was there. I bought a couple of hubcaps off him.
Well, then you'll understand how I felt when he hustled me into the studio and allowed me to record a song he'd had written for this very sad moment when... Well, we're having to look at a time when the only place we can see your TV show is in an actual museum.
You didn't write this one yourself.
Mr. King, let me level with you. The best songwriters in the world are only a phone call away.
Yeah.
Not my call, of course.
And this is a song about what? This show?
It's about that. It's about you and so much more. It's about learning to say goodbye, really, if you stop and think about it.
Well, let's just listen to it. The great Dewey Gordon. What's the name of the song?
Who Can I Talk To Tonight? This is for Larry. Who
I talk to? Where can I go when I need to be on somebody's show? Where questions have answers that you don't need to know? Who can I talk to tonight? You weren't aggressive. You didn't probe. You never tried to rip open the rope. Just a mic and a camera. No need for a strobe. Who can I talk to tonight? Queen Latifah, Queen Noor, Donald Trump, and Roger Moore. OJ and MJ helped your kingdom grow. Little old me and H. Ross Perot. Didn't read her book, didn't hear my song. Just a guy from Brooklyn, free to get things wrong. How could something so simple go on for so long? And who can I talk to tonight? Politics and showbiz, chatting with pals, then daily breakfast at Nate and Al's. We changed presidents, you changed wives, and through it all, you were part of our lives. Who can replace you? Why even try? Who else could make heart attacks a reason to buy? I'm still eating garlic just so I don't cry. Who can I talk to tonight? Yeah. Who can I talk to tonight? Who can I talk to tonight?
The great Dewey Gordon. Who can I talk to tonight? You know something? I'm asking myself the same question. Of course, the answer is my lovely wife. I love you, sweetheart.
Thanks, Mr. King, but I just had to share.
I was talking to Sean. Dewey, the song was very moving. What is it, on your website?
You know, we're talking about that. Apparently, we're a little behind on the upkeep details, but the first 140 characters of it will definitely be on my Twitter page.
The great Dewey Gordon, thanks so much, pal. Means a lot to me. Tomorrow night, Barry Scheck for the full hour.
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
inspector general.
Now,
oh, yeah.
News from the inspectors general. Afghanistan's, here's a reality for Secretary Kissinger, in case he's still listening. He's listening. Of course. Afghanistan's army and police are less capable than U.S. and NATO commanders have believed because the system for evaluating them is flawed, according to a Pentagon audit. The combat capabilities of many, quote, top-rated units, unquote, have been, quote, overstated, unquote, and overquoted. And these units haven't shown they can operate independently in the field. That's the report by Arnold Fields, Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction. The rating system, since its adoption way back in 2005, hasn't provided consistent and reliable measures of progress, the audit said. The system was replaced in April. Good progress. The U.S. has spent $27 billion, B as in BP, dollars, since 2002 for training Afghan security forces, but quote, what I've read in this report does not reflect $27 billion worth of investment by the American taxpayers, Fields said. The current strategy in Afghanistan is connected to the readiness of Afghanistan's forces. And, of course, we don't know how ready they are because we don't have anything. The ratings, which were given by U.S. and NATO trainers, put too much emphasis on quantitative factors, such as the number of troops authorized for a unit, not how many of them actually show up in the field on a sustained basis. But that's an easy mistake to make, don't you think? Really? Come on now. It's 4th of July. The auditors also found that trainers weren't asked their own opinions on the troops' readiness. Well, Fields auditors analyzed the ratings of 51 battalions that received the highest ratings and discovered that 20 of them, once in the field, regressed, quotes, to a lower level of readiness. Lindsay, Joe, John, you're over there. Check this out, will you? And then come on TV, most importantly. There's an audit of the U.S. Department of Agriculture's organic food program. It finds that international products stamped, that is to say, products from outside the United States stamped USDA organic, may not be. The audit was performed by the Inspector General of the Agriculture Department. It cites poor oversight as the reason. Well, then get over glasses. It reveals many overseas farms are never checked to make sure their products are chemical-free. Buy American. It's the 4th of July. What's the matter with you? The final report from the Inspector General today concerns, I think it's the same thing I just read. I think I printed it twice, ladies and gentlemen, just to celebrate. Yes, I did. Okay. So, news of Inspector General, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast about the oil spill. I said there'd be more about it. So is BP different? This is from a very long investigative piece by ProPublica, the nonprofit news site. And it looks at the 2005 blast at a BP rig in Texas City. According to a safety audit BP conducted just before that blast, many of the plant's more than 2,000 employees arrived at work each day with, quote, an exceptional degree of fear of catastrophic incidents, unquote. OSHA, the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration, fined BP $87 million last year, largest fine in OSHA history, for failing to repair many of the safety problems that led to the 2005 blast. Four more workers have died in various accidents since then. Two chemical releases in 2007 sent more than 130 people to the hospital. The plant has been cited so often for violating Texas's air quality laws, and you know how strong those are. They're among the nation's weakest. Last year, the Texas Attorney General's office filed civil charges against BP in state court. The most recent violation began 2 weeks before the oil in the Gulf. Over a 40-day period, the Texas City plant spewed 538,000 pounds of toxic chemicals into the air, including 17,000 pounds of benzene, a known carcinogen. That's ranking among the worst air quality violations in Texas in the last decade. When BP took possession of the plant after its 1999 merger of BP with Amoco, the refinery was losing money and in bad repair. Three times during the 1990s, Amoco had chosen not to make major upgrades that reports said were needed. A staff recommendation in 1991 and an OSHA citation in 1992 specifically urged Amoco to replace the blowdown drums. I'd always replace those myself, just because the band sounds better. BP had a reputation, according to internal documents, for turning quick profits by wringing money from the companies it bought, while Amoco was considered more sensitive to the needs of its employees. In a 2000 report, BP put a $10 million price tag on a human life, something Amoco had always refused to do. Soon after the merger, BP demanded a 25% budget cut across all its operations. This meant at Texas City, it cut inspectors and maintenance workers by the dozens to save $1 million. Eliminated safety calendars to save $40,000, reduced purchases of safety shoes for employees to save $50,000, and eliminated safety awards to save $75,000. Hey, buy your own shoes. You want to be safe. New managers who arrived at the Texas City refinery were often shocked by the state of the facility. In an interview with BP's own internal investigators, one described a, quote, big old rundown and dirty refinery where people were desperate for hope. I know the feeling. But by 2004, Texas City had become BP's most profitable refinery. In 2005, January, the Telus Group, an outside auditor, produced the most damning internal report to emerge from the Texas City refinery. After surveying more than 1,000 workers and interviewing hundreds, the auditors concluded the plant's employees had an exceptional degree of fear of catastrophe and that blindness across the entire corporation prevented current and critical safety information from reaching the top levels of BP management. Yes, so maybe the point is maybe BP is different, ladies and gentlemen. Or maybe not. Maybe they're, you know, maybe they're, maybe I. Anyway, that's the report on BP. Now it is the 4th of July weekend, and I can't help but turn back to one of the people that I grew up learning so much from and admiring so much, especially from his landmark album, Stan Freberg Presents the United States of America.
November 1621. By now, the white man has arrived in great numbers, not only at Miami, but at Jamestown, at Plymouth, and at Salem, Massachusetts. The Puritans have established a thriving colony, enjoying all the social and cultural refinements of a modern society.
Hiya, Harv. Who are you taking to the witch burning Saturday night?
Prudence Adams. Who are you taking to the Rotary Club luncheon?
I haven't got a date yet, but I hear it's going to be quite a spread.
Well, Mayor Pennypacker, how's it look for re-election?
Great, great, great. Never looked better.
Yeah, what about the Indian vote?
What do you mean by that?
Well, you're not too popular with the Indians. They could lose you the election.
That's possible.
Well, they outnumber us.
Well, that's the trouble. You give them an inch and they take over.
But, Mayor, they were here before we were. We moved in on them.
So we did. Well, there's just something about them. They wear funny shoes. They don't even have buckles on them.
Be that as it may, election is Friday. You better make some gesture this week.
Like what?
Well, how about if you make a concession and pick an Indian as a running mate? You'd be sure to carry the Indian block.
What? Anything happened to me, you'd have a mayor that wasn't a Puritan. He'd probably take orders directly from Chief Powhatan.
Yeah.
Say, I got it. The big luncheon tomorrow, the one under the trees.
What about it?
We'll ask an Indian. That'll impress the rest of them.
We could even announce you're going to put one in your cabinet.
No need to go that far. Just have one to lunch.
It'll be great press.
Mayor Pennypacker comes out for equality. Justice. Votes. What a slogan. Take an Indian to lunch this week. Show him we're a regular bunch this week. Show him we're as liberal as can be. Let him know he's almost as good as we. Make a feathered friend feel fed this week. Overlook the fact he's red this week. Let him share our Quaker oats, 'cause he's useful when he votes. Take an Indian to lunch.
2, 4, 6, 8, who do we tolerate? Indians, Indians, rah, rah, rah. Take an Indian to lunch this week. Let him sit right down and munch this week.
Let's give in and all do the brotherhood bit. Just make sure we don't make a habit of it. Take an Indian to dine this week. Show him we don't draw the line this week. We know everyone can't be as American as we. After all, we came over on the Mayflower. Take an Indian, not a wooden Indian, but a real life Indian to lunch.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. The Vatican this week issued an unprecedented rebuke of a top cardinal. His cardinal sin? He had accused the retired Vatican number two of blocking priest sex abuse investigations, publicly dressing down a man who had been praised for his criticism of church abuse cover-ups. The silencing of Cardinal Christoph Schönbrunn, the Archbishop of Vienna and long considered a papal contender, he could have been a papal contender, drew heated criticism from clerical abuse victims. They said the Vatican should be honoring Schönbrunn, not publicly humiliating him for his calls for greater transparency and demands for a crackdown on priests who molest children. He has also called for an open discussion of priestly celibacy views that the Vatican said he clarified this week during an audience with the Pope. No transparency, just clarity. The Pope also lashed out at what he called the deplorable raids carried out by Belgian police who detained bishops, confiscated computers, opened a crypt, and took church documents as part of an investigation into priestly sex abuse in Belgium. Benedict made a rare personal entry into the escalating diplomatic dispute with the country, issuing a message of solidarity to the head of the Belgian Bishops' Conference this week. Other bishops were detained, as well as the head of the conference. He said justice must take its course, but he asserted the right of the church to investigate clerical abuse alongside civil law enforcement authorities. It was the first time the Pope commented on the raids. Belgium's justice minister defended the searches, saying the bishops were treated normally and that the search warrant was legitimate. The police searched the home and former office of ex-Archbishop Gottfried Daniels. Attention, W.C. Fields fans. Gottfried Daniels, taking documents and his personal computer, just as the country's nine bishops were starting their monthly meeting. The men were held for 9 hours, one for each bishop, I guess, and had to surrender their cell phones. And police opened at least one tomb of a prelate, which particularly galled the Vatican. So now we know what galls the Vatican. Those tomb openings. And Catholics around Melbourne, Australia, this week heard of the church's deep shame at the crimes of abusive priests and its desire to make amends, but victims dismissed the apology as hollow words and said the church was doing less, not more. Helen Last, an advocate who represents 27 abuse victims, said they did not accept the apology and called for the church to open its files to police. Victims said they've been told the church felt too many people were now receiving aid to victims, and from the new financial year, which began on Thursday, assistance would be cut, including food and pharmaceuticals. Noreen Wood, whose account of being raped by a Jesuit priest while in hospital in 1978 appeared in the Age newspaper last June, received a one-line letter next week saying she would get no more food vouchers. But at least none of these priests were like Father Murphy in Wisconsin. You remember him. He's the one who molested 200 deaf boys.
Boom, 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 boom. One or two deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
In the next room.
Boom, boom.
Now they're in the closet.
Boom, boom.
Between me and the broom.
Boom, boom.
Half a dozen deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
Nice little crowd.
Boom, boom.
They can be quiet.
Boom, boom.
And I can be loud.
Boom, boom.
Four or 20 deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
Take me all day.
Boom, boom.
Barely got the time to.
Boom, boom.
Eat and to pray.
Boom, boom.
Deaf boys can't hear me coming. Deaf boys get my heartstrings to strumming. Make me make such a joyful noise. I just can't get enough.
Just can't
deaf
enough.
Boys.
Boom, 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 boom.
Half a hundred deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
Whoa, I got a head of steam.
Boom, boom.
I could be the coach.
Boom, boom.
And they could be my team.
Boom, boom.
88 deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
One for each key.
Boom, boom.
On the piano of my longing.
Boom, boom.
They play a hushed melody.
Boom, boom.
150 deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
Oh, this could get tight.
Boom, boom.
A few dozen in the morning.
Boom, boom.
And all the rest at night.
Boom, boom.
Deaf boys can't hear me coming.
Boom.
Deaf boys, don't you dare call it slumming.
Boom.
Might be a chink in my priestly poise, but how can I resist?
How can
deaf
I
boys.
Boom, 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 boom.
Now if I had a deaf boy,
boom, boom,
each day of the year,
boom, boom,
365,
boom, boom,
oh, that would be dear.
Boom, boom.
How many deaf boys,
boom, boom,
have there actually been?
Boom,
boom, boom.
Why not ask how many?
Boom, boom.
And dance on the head of a pin.
Boom, boom.
The world is full of deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
And I'm only one man.
Boom, boom.
All that God expects is
boom, boom.
Do all that you can.
Boom, boom.
Deaf boys can't hear me coming. Deaf boys got me hemming and humming. A shepherd with a closet full of toys. Let's hear it for those deaf boys.
Boom, 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 boom.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Sure we can. American climate change scientist Michael Mann has been cleared of manipulating his research findings. The allegations rose in the ClimateGate so-called scandal, which erupted when emails between Dr. Mann and other scientists were taken from a computer at the University of East Anglia. The Pennsylvania State findings follow two other investigations in Britain effectively exonerating climate scientists accused of misconduct. Mann's data adjustment procedures in particular were called into question when private email messages between him and other scientists were posted on the internet. Both reports have now cleared the scientist. As global warming threatens many animal species with extinction, the already destructive cane toad is set to flourish with increasing temperature. Say Australian scientists, the negative effect of high temperature does not operate in cane toads, meaning the toads will do very well with human-induced global warming, says Professor Frank Seebacher from the University of Sydney. There will be winners and there will be losers in climate change. The efficiency of the oxygen transport system in the cane toad increased with increasing temperatures. They had acclimated perfectly to increased temperatures, and their oxygen demands remained constant. So bet on the cane toads. Buy in the animal marketplace, buy cane toads. And with carbon dioxide in the atmosphere approaching alarming levels, even halting emissions altogether may not be enough to avert catastrophic climate change. Could scrubbing carbon dioxide from the air be a viable solution? A new study by scientists at the Carnegie Institution suggests that while removing excess carbon dioxide would cool the planet, complexities of the cycle would limit the effectiveness of a one-time effort. To keep carbon dioxide at low levels would require a long-term commitment. Ask the Afghans. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Sun beating down so hard, sweat rolling off of this shovel, digging in the devil's boneyard. Sure like a cool drink of water, soft rag to soothe my face. Sure like a woman to talk to in this place. It's 110 in the shade, going way down. Mama, won't you carry me? Pedal so hard I can't stand it, my shrivel up and blow away. Noonday sun make you crazy, at least that's what the old men say. Bottom laying hard as a gravestone, couldn't cut it with an axe. Gonna lay me down right here, and that's a fact. It's 110 in the shade. I sat here and think about leaving. Lord, I guess I never will. Heartache down in that city. Bright light scares me anyway. Sure like a woman to talk to in this place. There's 110 in the shade.
Oh, yeah.
Going way down, mama, won't you carry me? There's 110 in the shade.
And ladies and gentlemen, in case you didn't think there was enough deja vu in the oil already, guess what's going to cleanup workers on the Mississippi Gulf Coast? FEMA trailers with formaldehyde fumes. They're getting a second life as living quarters for workers associated with the cleanup. Ron Mason, owner of a disaster contracting firm, said that in the past 2 weeks he had sold more than 20 of the trailers to cleanup workers. The companies that employ them in Venice and Grand Isle. These are perfectly good trailers, Mason said. Look, you know that new car smell, he continued? Well, that's formaldehyde, too. The stuff is in everything. It's not a big deal. I like the cut of his jib. In fact, I like the whole jib. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at this same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available on your smartphone through Stitcher.com. Available as a free download to members at audible.com/LaShow. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like having more of that new car smell if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Typical show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and in exile, and Hawaii desks, and to Mr. Bob Dunn here at WWNO-FM New Orleans for helping to make today's show end. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. And don't forget, the show is on Twitter, at LaTwits. Some special little things come to people who read that page. And some of them are good. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.